everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We are excited that you are with us tonight. We are kicking off the month of autism awareness on our broadcast. And tonight we are talking about understanding behavior and your child's sensory needs. And my special guest tonight is Matt Sloan. Welcome, Matt.
Hi. Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's great to have you with us again. Matt has been on our broadcast before, and I will make sure to link that in our YouTube video after this interview so you can watch that interview as well. But we're glad to have you back and glad to be talking about this subject. And I was commenting to Matt even before we started about his background. He is in a beautiful Washington state and outside. So got to enjoy that weather when you can.
Especially in Washington, yeah.
Yes, exactly. I used to live on the West Coast. Very wet a lot of the time. So thanks for joining us and talking about this. I know it's an issue that a lot of families deal with. Whether we have kids on the spectrum or not, we deal with behavior issues and kind of wonder if they're related to something that we can help our child with, that it isn't just disobedience, it's something that they're dealing with internally. So I'm excited to address that issue and to kind of dig into that a little bit with you. I also want to thank Knotgrass History for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We will hear a little bit more about them about halfway through this broadcast. So thank you, Knotgrass, for sponsoring this episode. And if you are joining us, I see we have viewers popping on, but we would love for you to be able to share this with someone else that you know that may also have questions, comments about behavior issues and sensory needs for kids, and we want you to be part of the conversation. So whether you're watching on YouTube, Facebook, or Periscope, you can put your questions or comments in the feed and be part of this conversation. So we welcome you to do that. So Matt, as we are getting started, I would love for our audience to get to know you a little bit, what you do and why do you talk about sensory issues, sensory needs and behavior, how that's all mixed into what you do and what you're passionate about?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Matt. I'm an occupational therapy assistant. And that's, occupational therapy has kind of a pretty broad umbrella.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot you can do in that practice. Mm-hmm. I generally am trained in sensory integration therapy, and that's where I pull a lot of what I do. So that's if you don't know what that is, that's a specific type of therapy designed by Dr. Gene Ayres in the 70s. And it's a bottom-up approach. It's a way to work with kids through getting their sensory systems kind of integrate into work.
Yeah. Because
that's with autism, there's generally a sensory component.
Yep.
Before I got into this, I was a special education teacher. And my main focus was, or my the biggest population I worked with, and I did this for roughly 13 years, was kids with social emotional behavior disorders. Mm-hmm. And I took a more of a behavior approach, a cognitive approach to behavior. And, that stuff, that stuff's great. It works. There's a place for it. Had I known then what I know now, I would have done things a lot differently with folks. A lot of my kids.
We can all say that, can't we?
Yeah, right.
I know.
But I feel like when you're working with a kid and there's behaviors, then it's a full front. I mean, you use all your tools at your disposal, and I feel like some sensory strategies can be very helpful. In working with kids, while you're using any other strategies.
And I'm excited for you to share some tonight because I know you said you had a lot of them to share. So you have a business called Sensory Fitness.
I run Sensory Fitness. It's a fitness program for everyone, but generally my clients are generally on the spectrum, struggle with sensory processing disorder or ADHD or some kind of neurodiversity. A lot of my kids, they don't like movement. They don't you know, well in sports, and some of them don't get off the couch and do a lot of stuff. But, and then on the other end of the spectrum, a lot of them are just, they love it. They're all the best.
Right.
My teachers and my avoiders. Yeah. So I do my best to work on getting them to a place, a ready state, and working on motor skills. So those are kind of my two things I focus.
That's
great. Yeah.
I love that you point out the both ends of those, that spectrum, because kids that are sensory, you know, that have these sensory needs can be on one or the other. And we want to focus on just, you know, how you typify a child that has sensory needs, and it can be such a wide range.
Yes. Yes.
And I know, as we were talking before we started this broadcast, we were discussing about the difference between difficulties versus diagnoses. And I think we can get so hung up on that, because a lot of parents will say, well, but my child doesn't have a diagnosis. Can they still have sensory needs? And so I'd like you to dive into a little bit of that and explain that.
All right. Well, everything is a spectrum, right? We're all sensory. We all have sensory systems, and we all have sensory difficulties at some point or another. A lot of it's related to stress, where our stress level is. You know, imagine when you're in a minivan, and I drive a minivan. I love my minivan.
Okay.
Another thing, I got my kids in the back, the dogs, my wife's there, and the radio's on. It's raining, so like that's a high stress situation. So what do you do? You turn down the radio. You tell them to be quiet. You put the wife on the reduce that sensory input, so you can focus on one thing at a time. That's you know, that's sensory struggle. People with PTSD, kids with ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, can hang on to it can develop into a sensory difficulty. Difficulty with touch, sound, sight, these things. So there's that, and then there's also people with like disorders. So anybody on the autism spectrum. I said this at a couple of talks, and actually people with autism came up to me later and said, well, I have autism and I don't have any sensory issues. I'm not going to debate that. You tell me that's fine. But generally, I see that most people on the autism spectrum generally have sensory processing disorder. That's disorder is different than the difficulty. Disorder gets in the way of life significant to the point where one of my kids, when a teacher spoke, her hands, like that's some crisscrossing stuff going on. That gets in the way of life, right? You know, a lot of kids on the spectrum, they do a lot of, you know, they'll cover their ears.
Yeah, my daughter walks around the house with her noise-canceling headset on.
things like that. It stop them from functioning as best they could. So that's a disorder. And if it's significantly impacting, you know, I suggest going and get therapy. But there's still, therapy is, I always suggest sensory integration therapy. If you know an OT, OTs are the ones that generally administer that kind of therapy, but not all OTs are trained in sensory integration.
That's a good point. Yes.
But it's not the only thing that works. I think it kind of gets to the bottom. It starts from the ground up, getting to the root of a problem. But there's also, besides getting therapy, there's also a lot you can do at home. And you can modify environmental modifications around your house, and there's activities you can do with your kids as well.
Yeah, that's great, because we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. Those things you can do around your house. I'm excited for you to share that. It's interesting. I think I heard, I can't remember where it was, but they said that teenagers now have, the majority of them have adrenal issues. And a lot of it is just stress related with just what they go through on a regular basis. And it does create sensory needs for just kids across the board, whether they're just having difficulties in life without a diagnosis. So,
being in a high state of stress can, you know, just kind of like that minivan thing. Another way I try to explain it to people is, you know, we all struggle with sensory issues. And if you're in a high state of stress, like let's say you're at a party and you're having a conversation, and you're at that high level of cognition. You're having an intellectual conversation. You're hobnobbing and everything's going great. But you really have to go to the bathroom. You're going to be able to remember. You have to take care of that sensory need. You have to deal with that. same thing. It's along those lines. Like you have to go take care of that sensory need before I can get to the higher cognitive. So a lot of our kids struggle with that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the noise is too loud. Maybe they're not feeling their bodies as they should, or the vestibular system's off.
Right.
Things like that.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy, because I think we've all experienced that. So at least maybe not at a party, but just in general.
Yeah, somewhere.
Yeah. So, right, exactly. So so before we dive into some sensory strategies, I know we have some viewers. So if you're watching and thinking, well, you know, this is something, or if there's a strategy that we're going to be talking about and you want to know more about it, definitely put your comments or questions in the feed. We'd like to incorporate those into our discussions. So Matt, what are some of your favorite sensory strategies?
Well, oh man. Well, okay. So I always start with getting to a kid. So why would we use a sensory strategy in the first place?
That's a good, yes.
The same reason you would use a behavior strategy is to get the kid back on track, or to do something you ask them to do, or, you know, to be at a ready a state of learning, an optimal performance range, however you want to say it. I want my kid to do his work. Okay.
So right.
Generally I look at it, if the kid is, my son, you know, my little guy, he's often way up here. He's like, so when I see that, if I see a kid, a really, really high alert level, and really just running around the house, and they're all over the place, and I'm going to do my best to kind of, number one, I'm going to reduce visual if I can, and reduce audio, so I'll use less language. That can be hard in the home, especially when you have kids and dogs. And
right.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the point is that you do what you can to help reduce those. And I'm going to give them two things that always help me organize my brain is heavy work. One of the things that helps me moving weight. When I pick up weight, that that's proprioception. That's like I'm actively using my muscles. And when I move things, there's a reason why you feel really good and when you go to the gym. And one is you're getting all the benefits of exercise, but also you're getting that deep proprioception. I'm using my muscles, and that releases serotonin and dopamine, which are organizing chemicals, calming chemicals.
Okay.
So any way you can do that, I mean, I can give you so how do you do active proprioception? Right? So active muscle use. Climbing, crawling, slow things I would try to suggest, or moving weights, things like that. The other one is deep pressure is another way to kind of bring me down. And that's like putting weight on maybe a weighted blanket. Or
weighted blankets, yep.
Pillows. My son loves to lay down with the dog on top.
Dogs,
so he gets a dog. Things like that. A really cool one, and this is one that is oral motor activities, where I wish I had thought of this before I came here today, but I should have brought some of my stuff. But, you know, using a straw to blow into water, to blow bubbles into water. That's activating my core. That takes a lot of breath work. I'm there, and I'm promoting that calm breathing, first breath breathing, diaphragmatic breathing. That's heavy work, things like that.
And parents get mad at kids when they blow bubbles in their milk.
We promote it around them. Like, oh yeah, and you know you're strengthening the lip seal, and that's you need these things. You need a strong diaphragm. You need a lip seal for calming. It's what do babies do when they're stressed?
Right, that deep breathing is so important.
Right, they suckle. They do that. We still do it when we get stressed. With people put pens in their mouth.
Right.
It's the same thing. So that can help you kind of get organized. So I always go to either both is a heavy work and deep pressure. Now when I'm doing like the active work, so here's a story. So when I was a teacher, I worked with an alternative high school, and I immediately, I'm also a personal trainer, and I know the benefits of exercise. Mm-hmm. So we would do a thing called focus before class, and I had a couple different options.
Great idea.
One, some kids would do boxing with me, or they do yoga in another room, or they do a pre-basket. And the kids that did the boxing and the yoga generally had a better time to come back to class. The kids that went to basketball, it was chaotic. They would come back and they would work. And so I didn't know this at the time, but what usually, you know, number one, basketball is kind of chaotic. It's a ball flying over. It's open. Right? There's a lot of visual stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as much heavy work. If you think of boxing, yoga, it's very slow, and I'm getting all that heavy work. Basketball, right, I'm running, it's kind of light. Also, I'm activating my vestibular system, and that's kind of the opposite of that. So anytime you can try it. You can just sit right here and shake your head for a minute.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's going to increase your alert level.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I move my vestibular system is movement of my head. So when I'm doing these activities, and let's say I have a kid and I'm trying to give him some active heavy work, and he's crawling over the couch, but he's falling and he's jumping and his head is moving, and then I see after he's worse or still having a hard time, then think about like where his head moving was. Things like that. It's not that cut and dry, but it's something to be aware of.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of times we just see it as annoying instead of is a sign that this is what this child needs. And maybe we should take a break and do some heavy work or something that them reset.
On the other side of that, if kids are doing that anyway, if you see a kid like standing on their head or rolling around, they might need to get some vestibular input. And that's okay. That's okay to do that. But I would always end with heavy work, and or deep breath. And the oral motor one is one of the best. It's just, you know, the idea with kids, mouth juices everywhere, right? But you can blowing up balloons, blowing whistles.
Oh, yes.
Any way to get that, drinking through a straw. And the activity with just give the kid a straw and drink out of the straw.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great way to do that.
And, you know, that brings me to an issue that a lot of parents who homeschool often comment on is that we do these activities, but then I can't get my child back. And so it makes me think that, you know, this analogy, the story that you had about the basketball versus the boxing or the yoga is maybe we're choosing the wrong activities and it's harder to get kids back. What else do you have as far as suggestions in that area?
Well, I think, I know any movement, I'm always going to defer to movement. If their kid needs to move or they're having trouble focusing, move. I'm not going to, there's no bad movement, right? Not really. It all depends on how the kid is after the movement. That's why I always say, no matter what it is you do, try to end it with some heavy work. Because some kids don't like to do the active heavy work. Just don't. Some people just don't like to exercise because they got to move weight. That takes effort.
But
some people get on a swing, that's easy. I'm not doing work, but I'm getting a ton of input. That's a great movement thing. But as soon as I'm done with those swingings, something I suggest, if you can have a swing in your house or outside, use that. Make sure it's linear as opposed to spinning. Spinning can have adverse effects even 4 hours later. The kid's just ripping around. And I've heard parents like, oh, he loves it. Well, yeah, it's great. He's loving it. But also, it kind of shreds the nerve. I mean, it shreds the nervous system. But it can have adverse effects even up to 4 hours later.
Just, wow. I have to pay attention to that because I do aerial silks and I spin a lot in the morning. I do it every morning.
Well, if you're doing aerial silk, you're also getting that heavy work. Like
I'm pulling all my weight up by my arms.
It's one thing to do if you ever get sick from spinning, just do some heavy work and you'll feel it'll help kind of organize your brain and you won't feel too. It's the same thing. That's my technical difference.
that's great.
Yeah, so if you can, if you're doing spinning, go 10 one way, 1 second per rotation, and then go 10 the other way, and do that for a little bit, and then end with some either linear, and then try to get some heavy. They always end with heavy. That's what when I work with kids in the clinic, or even in the, I'll try to end with some kind of slow, calm, heavy movement kind of thing.
Yeah, and I'm sure that you can use just average things around your house too. You don't have to have weights. Do you have any suggestions in that area?
Yeah, so obstacle courses are fantastic.
Yes.
Especially with the little kids. You know, up and over the couch if you're okay with
right.
Some of us don't like that. But, you know, kind of look for ways to get creative. If you have just your living room, moving, stacking, maybe making a cushion tower or sandwiching in between the pillows or doing their work while they're under the couch. Under the couch, but maybe, you know, a chair.
Sometimes
even just that can help. Just having a defined space for my body. If I had a kid just sitting crisscross on the floor, he's kind of out in the open. But if I have him sit on a dot or under a blanket or on their stomach with a beanbag on top, that's letting me know where my body is. And that, that's calming. It's very foundational stuff. And these are, you know, it's not a cognitive strategy, but it's something you can add to help kids feel, let them know where their bodies are and just feel that. And that can be just enough sometimes to stay on track.
Yeah. I've seen that before. And I think I interviewed a long time ago. We were talking about yoga and there was and this lady said that the first time she turned a girl who had autism upside down, it freaked her out, but she said she kept wanting to do it. This change in body orientation just sparked something new in her.
You
just never know.
And I think a lot of it stems, sensory issues like that stem from, from development. Like as babies, that everything we know we do now is because of what we did when we were young. So babies, their first move, they first start turning their head and then they start to roll at some of them and then they start to crawl and scoot and all these movements. If some of those were missed, some of those milestones were missed for whatever reason, sometimes the kids just go from like sitting to walking and miss crawl.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you can do about that. Just know that might have an adverse effect on their body mechanics and their sensory system. It's all related. Movement and sensory, it's always related.
It's really interesting. Yeah. And to go back and to kind of not fill in the gaps, but just use these strategies to help kids, you know, figure out what might be some way to calm them or to offset some things that they, because I, wouldn't you say that maybe they avoid those things that they don't know?
Yes. So that's it's kind of two ends of the spectrum there is you have your avoiders and your seekers. Some kids don't like to move and, you know, you can almost break it down per sensory system. Like some kids don't like to touch things. Tactile sensitivities. They avoid it because they're hypersensitive. It's too much. So, like, if you look at the tactile system, some of those kids that they don't like the clothes on their back. You'll see a lot of, like, younger kids hold something in their hand a lot. Or for older kids, they'll pull their sleeves over their palm or their hood goes up. Because they don't want to interact with the world too much, so they have to cover up, and it's defensive. I don't want to interact with the world. I sense too much, and I just need to narrow it down. With the minivan, I got to turn it down, and we got to. Vestibular. Some kids don't like to move because their vestibular system, it's not as integrated as it could be. It can feel weird. Or sends them into a tizzy.
Right. Yeah. So then sensory integration is a lot of just getting to places where they're trying to avoid, but slowly working into those places. Is that kind of a good description?
You want the senses to kind of work together. So when I walk down the street and I can feel the wind on my face, the sun on the sun on my skin, the cars going by, the clothes on my back, the change in the ground, that's all of my senses working together.
Got it.
So if I have an issue with one sensory system, it can affect the rest. Things like that. So, the big three that I look at are tactile, proprioception, and vestibular. Those are the big three. And those are the ones, so we were just talking about the tactile system. That's one example of vestibular. Some kids, you'll see a lot of proprioception seekers. kids that are active. And this was me as a kid. I didn't really feel my body. It's almost like when you go over, you're driving and you go down the hill real fast, and you you can get that feeling in your body. Mm-hmm. You don't feel your body, so you get up and you do things to feel. You would hit things or pick things up or run around and bolt.
Right.
A lot of very low burst, because then that gives me some body sensation. I can feel, that's good. Now I know where my body is. Okay, now I can.
Right. Well, that can be kind of scary as a parent when you see your children doing that.
Yeah.
But it's good to understand the why behind it and why they're doing that and to be able to feed that with safe activities so that they become more integrated.
Yeah. So you asked me for some strategies. We kind of just talked about heavy work stuff. And some scooter, but tactile is a big piece of that. There's a lot of tactile activities. Depends on the kiddo, but having a brush.
I've heard of that.
It could be a comb or whatever, or letting them, that's that deep squeeze, that deep pressure, that's tactile. Tactile is light touch and deep pressure. It's outside in. For a kid that can squeeze into stuff or have certain textures they can pet. If you have a dog, that can also be very helpful.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that. Mm-hmm. All the more reason to get a pet. Well, we have three cats and a dog, so I think we've fulfilled that one. We have a question from a viewer, or just a comment, I guess. Kenya says, this information is excellent. My kids need sensory integration therapy. I live in the Dominican Republic, and it's hard to find a good OT. Matt has some things online that could you give her some information just about what you do and how she. I'm going to put your website up again
I have some things on at sensoryfitness.org. I have there's some videos that I have on there you can check out. I'm in cahoots with Lackey Kid. You can go to their website, and we do a couple of videos once a month. There's some stuff on YouTube. I'm sorry. I don't even know where my stuff is. It's out there. You type in Sensory Fitness somewhere.
If you go to your website, which I was on today, it's all connected on there. So
it's all on
there. Sensoryfitness.org.
I have a video series called Sensory Solutions for Challenging Behaviors. So dogs make a lot of noise. And that's the whole video series dedicated to speech. it's dedicated to teaching parents and caregivers how to work with give us some sensory tips at home. Getting into the meat of whatever the stuff I just talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great because there are people like Kanaya that do live in rather remote places. And you know, I used to live on a farm in the middle of nowhere and having some resources to be able to use was definitely helpful when I had younger kids. So having those resources online and with COVID, it seems everybody's going online anyways. So she said, thank you, for that. So before we dive into any more, and especially we're going to also talk about just movement in general, which I know we've been talking about a little bit too, let's take a break and hear from our sponsor, and then I'll bring Matt back and we'll continue this conversation. So if you have questions or comments, like Kanaya, definitely put those in the feed and we will include those in our conversation the next half an hour. So I'll give you a break, Matt, and I'll see you in just a few moments. And I would love to thank Knotgrass History for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. Knotgrass History, I just love to tell you about them and also let you know that we've done already one unboxing. We're working on another one but on our YouTube channel, we're going to have some reviews coming out about some of their history programs. But Knotgrass History helps families like yours succeed at homeschooling. Students enjoy learning and parents feel confident teaching. Knotgrass History curriculum use narrative lessons, primary source documents, historical novels and biographies, and hands-on activities to create engaging learning experiences for children of all ages and abilities. Your family can study U.S. history, world history, geography, government, civics, and economics. And I'm reviewing their economics high school program. So Knotgrass History helps history learners become history makers. You can visit them at knotgrass.com and learn more about them today. So thank you, Knotgrass, for sponsoring again this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. And definitely you can check them out at knotgrass.com. So we're going to come back here. Let me bring Matt back up on the screen. And so we've had a great first half an hour talking about a lot of things. And Amy just says, sorry, late. That's okay. It's even if you're joining us late, we just want you to know that this is all being recorded. It'll be on YouTube indefinitely, as long as YouTube's there. So you can go back and catch the first half an hour after we are done with the live recorded sessions. So, or you can listen to the podcast that's going to be coming out on Sunday as well. And you can check out all those links on our website at spedhomeschool.com. So Matt, we had a good first half an hour talking about some sensory strategies and a whole lot of other things about behavior and the difference, difficulties, diagnoses, and just kind of how we all have sensory issues is, you know, kind of the meat and potatoes of it all, and in that we need movement. So why is that? You know, as I told you before the broadcast, you know, a lot of times parents will say, but I just want to get the work done. You know, why do we have to take time for this? And can't we just like plow through the schoolwork, you know, just do a little bit of movement and, you know, call it good. So why is that movement just so important?
It's so important. Well, it's, you know, it's important for kids because they are still developing. Mm. So you know, movement is crucial for brain development. That's just the bottom line. Everything we learn is because time out of the birth canal, you know, until today, movement is incorporated in everything. So I just totally got off track.
That's okay.
especially for kids, movement is crucial. So there's that, and kids aren't moving as much as they used to. It's a fact.
That is so true.
It's mm-hmm. not as, you know, from babies, you know, like my kid, I especially a younger one, I really swaddled him. The only way I can get him to shut up. If he just fell out. But then because I'm doing that, I restricted movement. And, you know, he had a lot of behavior problems later, and that was because of it. I don't know. We definitely keep kids kind of contained a lot more, from babies, everywhere from swaddling to baby seats, all the way through adolescence with the increase of technology.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, kids are outside less. I live on a street with, there must be 20 kids on the street. I never see them. They never leave their, you know, it's, people are scared that, you know, rightfully so, that kids are getting hit by a car out on the street or they get abducted. These are real fears, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But also know that kids are not out in groups, climbing trees, throwing rocks, playing with sticks, making decisions, you know, together. They're not walking to each other's houses and knocking on the door saying, hey, you know, those is like so more social skills, but that's movement involved. You know, kids are just not moving as much. And so we see an uptick in behaviors and an uptick in diagnosis, like ADHD and sensory processing sort of. And a lot of time, it's just kids needed to move. Misdiagnosed. So movement is crucial, and especially from like that, from birth to 8, 9, 10. So that's when the nervous systems are really developing. After that, they kind of, I don't want to say solidified, but it'd be a little different working with an adolescent. But still, movement is still crucial. I'm an adult. I need to move. I can't focus. If I don't get my exercise at some point during the day, I have to bring my alert level. I need to be able to focus.
Right.
As I drink coffee, like
That was what I was thinking too, but it just doesn't do the trick like a good workout can.
We're all seeking homeostasis, and we do that through movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then, sorry, I'm just going to keep going. So,
good.
As I was saying before, you know, a lot of people ask me, a lot of parents ask me, what kind of movements? And,
You know,
as I was saying before, like any movement, anytime you're doing activity, it's going to be, that's fantastic. Taking into account all the sensory information I was talking about earlier,
and
there are specific movements you can do, specific things you can do. And this is how I think of it. Number one, the three things I focus on are one of them is posture. So helping a kid increase their posture, having stable joints, especially in the shoulders.
Because
if I'm kind of loosey-goosey posture, that my posture dictates my alertness level. It dictates my emotions and vice versa. Emotions also dictate my alert level. So some kids are kind of stuck in this excited response. These are our kids. Maybe some of our toe walkers. That's an a stance, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you get scared, you do this. Because all your tension muscles
they just tense up. And
So if I'm in this position, it's going to put me in a high alert state. Things like that. So I'm going to try to focus on flexion and vice versa. Some kids are just down here. So I'm going to focus on things like that. So I'm going to focus on strengthening. So stable joints in the shoulder, elbow, wrist, help with joint loading, things like that. Without stable these three, then this is going to be difficult to navigate, find more record. So posture one. The other one is coordination. So coordination, having a middle of my body, that's the foundation of coordination. So what I mean is like there's a midline down your back. And I have two hands, two eyes, two ears, two legs. These things have to coordinate together for me to do things. Think of all the things you do during the day. It's your hands coming together across a midline, or your arms and legs working together. I forgot the word.
Bilateral movement? Or something like that. I don't know. I'm not an expert in that area.
I did get my shot yesterday, so I'm a little
I'm
out of it. But all of these things have to coordinate. So that's one thing I'll focus on. I'll focus on it working at midnight or crossing midnight. That's a big deal.
Yeah,
things like that, and that's it. Also includes my eyes and my ears. You know that they when I read, I have to cross midnight. Seems like I'm reading this eye is crossing midnight. But to get to here, now this eye is crossing. And if I have difficulty, that if I don't have a center of my body. That can be
different. Right.
Even how I walk, things like that. And then the third would be kind of the motor stuff, the motor planning. And if, you know, if I kind of focus on those other two, that motor planning I kind of work on, but I can be intentional about how to work on it. And motor planning is just doing novel movements I don't normally do. So like if you say to a kid, okay, get your mat. Okay, well, what does that mean? That's not like, that's not something I normally do every day, or maybe it is, but that's not something I normally do. That means I have to turn around, I have to go find my book, I have to know the page to open it to, I have to get my pencil, get my other notebook, open that up. That's a lot of steps. So if I have good motor planning, a general statement like that can be very, let's get ready for dinner. What are you talking
about? Right, yep.
Go get the plates. Right, I can do that. Go get the plate. Put the plate on the counter. So it's like things like that. Multiple step.
Where
it's like, you know, second move. Unless you do every day.
There's a lot to think about. You know, you talked about that heightened sense of, that kids are in, and just that posture, and just I remember hearing something about just how core strength in kids has gone down so much. And Kanaya said that her son is a toe walker. He's 7 years old. What are some ways that you can work on that posture with kids?
Toe walking in specific?
Either that or just posture in general.
So I look at core strength, joint stability. So posture, yeah. Core strength, joint stability, trunk rotation, neck strength. So that's kind of how I
guess I never thought about flexibility being involved with posture.
Yeah, your trunk, because like a lot of kids, you might sit and they have that kind of collapsed trunk space. They're kind of like,
oh, yeah.
That affects the tension level. It's the same thing with those rounded shoulders. But what I'll do a lot of like on my stomach superhero poses. You know, that's a great way. That's a great way to work on core. Or just the opposite, flip them over on your stomach and bring your knees up. Now, those are exercises. But I try to do it through play. That's another thing I try. That's another thing that's kind of big. Is any time I do anything, I try to do it through play. If I have a kid do exercises and that motivates them, great, awesome.
Yeah, but if there's not many of them,
it's good that they're getting the strengthening. That's good, but I'm also looking for them to know how to move their body, not just about holding that position. That's part of it, but also want them to be able to hold that position and roll and move their body naturally or smoothly. So, so I'll look for fun ways to do those two positions. So Superman on my stomach where I'm extended out and then flexing, bring my knees up. So even something like hanging onto a trapeze bar and bringing my knees up. That's So you can work on that. A zip line, like with my knees up. Swimming while I'm on my stomach, that's extension. Pulling a kid on a scooter, either on their stomach or on their butt, and they can things like
because you have to balance, and balance is huge for core strength.
Well, yeah, but exact balance, and then just holding that position, and it's fun, and that's who doesn't want to be pulled around on a scooter? I mean, I would love that. Zipping around, so and then having fun, and they're working on hand strength. Shoulder stability because they're moving the rope or something.
I think we used to use skateboards for that too. We were little, you'd just go down the driveway on those things. We were working on our core strength.
That's what you do when you being outside and kids naturally gravitate towards those things. I just feel like a lot of that time outside, climbing trees, throwing rocks, digging in dirt. Limited. That's not true in all the cases, but I feel like from what I see, a lot of my kids that I see, I ask them how much time they spend outside. Like, look, put it out, it's video game. I'm like, ah, cow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was the mother with my teenage daughter who said the same thing a couple weeks ago. And she stopped doing aerial stuffs because she was so sore and had so many other issues. And I was like, oh, yes, she hasn't been on them and hasn't done any exercise. But fortunately, she had somebody else talk her into it, telling her she needed to do it. Because I think we get those teenagers and they're like, they don't want to listen to mom and dad, but maybe they'll have another voice of reason speaking into their lives. So,
I might have sounded a little condescending there, like get your kids outside. But I mean, my kids are inside right now watching a TV show. But it's just to be aware that, us as parents, especially when we're at home with our kids, we need our time. And to structure my kids' time all the time, it's exhausting. It's impossible.
Right. So
knowing the movements that help with motor skills and core strength and all of that is alone beneficial. So when they do an activity, you can kind of focus on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's nice to, to know what would be most effective if we have that time or we plan it into our homeschool day, so that so it's getting them the things that they need to build on those three areas that you were talking about. So we talked about posture and just some exercises for that. But what about the other two areas? What types of exercises can parents focus on that are pretty simple?
One thing is using things like there's a guy, you can find him on YouTube. His name is Jacob White. He runs a program called Eye Hand Body. And all he does is he has a whole bunch of activities you can do to fall. Right? Because think of it, it's low tech, right? So it's just something as simple as like moving the ball back and forth through hands, and then you upgrade every time. So then you bounce the ball.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you bounce opposite hands. He has thousands and thousands of Oh, wow. Things like that, coordinating mm-hmm. activities. So something with a ball can be, throwing a ball around can be great. But I would watch, like, is the, when my kid throws the ball, is he crossing midline? So mm. it's not, you know, I'm sitting down now, but some kids will throw and they'll put the same foot out that their hand is.
I never thought about that.
I'm not like crossing my midline. That can be, so I may want to prompt the other foot, or maybe I'll just want to throw a big rugby ball, or a football, or a soccer ball, something they have to use two hands. Mm. And maybe we'll do like a side pass, things like that, coordinating activity. Or kicking a ball across, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be arms and legs. You know, you can use like a toilet paper roll and just look through your right eye and look, you know, look for things across over here and then vice versa. Hmm. And then do the same, take that same tube and put your ear, you know, across over here. So you're taking anything on this side and bringing it to that side.
Uh-huh. Like that. Uh-huh.
There's a million of them. And then putting it all together with the motor planning piece, I love obstacle courses.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. if you do a step, then two steps, then three steps, you keep adding onto it. Mm-hmm. One thing I always try to promote is I do, we do, you do. So,
that's a great difficulty
with mm-hmm. motor planning. So, I model it and mm-hmm. then we do it together so they're kind of getting more support. And then they come up with, or they make the same one you made, and then they come up with their own. And then mm-hmm. I do go through it, things like that. And generally, the activities within the obstacle course, I'll put in the posture stuff and the coordination stuff and whatever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter as long as you're hitting a lot of things.
So. Right. Yep. Okay. So my question for you now is, I know our guest last week said, I'm not the one that gets down on the floor and does things with my kids. That's not me. I definitely love to get out and get involved. But do you have any words of advice for those parents that maybe are saying, I'm not sure about me doing that?
First thing I'm always going to say is go on, just do it one or two times a week. Go on then. Put on your sweatpants, get down on the floor and make a mess. Because it's good for you. It's good to play around. You get it. You know, it's fun to throw caution to the wind sometimes. Just in a controlled way, right? Because then the kids get to see a part of you and you're playing, and there's power in play. There is. And there's
yes.
a bond, and you're and maybe, you know, if you're having lots of behaviors, that time can be spent bonding, which is helpful to you. I'm always going to say that. Number two, you know, there's plenty of videos on YouTube, things like that, where kids can do that kind of stuff. Or signing them up for sports, if they can do that, or finding a gym. Places like, you know, they have these indoor places, like the trampoline and things like that.
Right. Yeah, they have those autism gyms and other places.
You rock the spectrum. There's places that
huge
obstacle course kind of places.
Mm-hmm.
And kicking the kids out once in a while and just locking the door, I think is fine. Because it's plenty of trees. Even if it's rainy out, even if they end up staring at a tree and like just not doing a whole lot, at least they're outside and they're in nature, and there's a lot going on that you don't even realize. When a kid is just staring into the woods, they're practicing. They're getting that's a whole other piece of vision. But we'll say that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, if I'm staring at the woods, I see little birds, animals moving. I have to track those, and that helps my vision. Vision is a big piece of it, too, because that's also posture. Like, if my eyes are weak, then my eyes are wiggling, and that's going to affect my posture. And then my computer system's moving.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Never thought about that. Mm-hmm.
Being away from screens, being away from inside, being outside is very good for your eyes. Watching animals throwing rocks at targets. Eating things with sticks. Or digging in the dirt. You know, that's...
Oh, yeah.
It's all naturally out there anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's some great motivation. I know. I think we're going to have a blog later this month about just outdoor activities to do with your kids and different things that, you know, just rather inexpensive ways that you can get outside and do some activities. So next month is what we're focusing on. We're focusing on outdoor activities for our broadcasts and our blogs. So I'm just thinking ahead because we're doing those right now because all the other ones for this month are already done. But
archery's a great one. I use that a lot with my kids if you're doing outdoor activities.
What is that?
Archery. I use archery.
Archery, my kids.
It's fun. And you'll see right away some kids struggle with it.
Mm-hmm. that does take a lot of coordination.
And I have a couple of cheap bows I got from my home. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a great tool.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just so many things that if we, can get outside and just think outside the box too of what we can do instead of just the norms. Yeah. So, well, this is great. This has been some good information. We only got 10 minutes left, so I definitely want to give you time to kind of say anything else. If there's anything else you have on the top of your head before.
I just making movement a part, an expectation of the day. I feel like, we're kind of talking about a very broad subject.
Right.
We were talking about earlier, we were talking about autism and sensory and ADHD a little bit. And, maybe we talked about maybe we're mm-hmm. and movement. So, it's anytime I incorporate allowing my kid to move as much as they possibly can, mm-hmm. It's only going to benefit taking into account, the vestibular system and the foot. I would focus on those three things as far as sensory input. As in a kid's regulation, I would look at the tactile input they're getting, the vestibular input they're getting, and the proprioception input they're getting. And then I would reduce, if it's too much, reduce the visual input.
Hmm.
And as well, you kind of have this kids that like to do stuff and kids that don't like to do stuff. So kids that I would call that passive and active. So the active kids are kind of easy, right? You just give them an activity and do it.
Right, exactly.
But other kids, it's hard. So that's where I would incorporate where you have to figuring out a way to get the kid to move. So things that move, like swings, because they're getting the benefit of movement without doing a lot of work. But if I'm just pushing a kid, I'll do that for a minute and maybe I'll add a rope they have to hold on to. So now they actually have to use their hand. They're getting that.
So that's a great idea. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe I'll get a bungee cord and they'll start pulling themselves. So always, if I'm starting passively, I'm always going to kind of try to help it.
Get
as much as I can at
it. That's great advice.
Like you're saying, skateboarding, things like that. Something that they can scoot or slide or dragging a kid on a sheet across the floor.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That's a good point, because kids will just if they tend to be that one that wants to sit, they're gonna try to stay in that mode.
yeah, it's hard, especially if they're maybe sitting down using a tablet or on a screen for. It's hard to get them to up and move. So, if you think about it, it's like if you ever get on a roller coaster, and when you get off that roller coaster, you're jazzed,
right?
And you didn't do any work. You're just on a roller coaster. You're very alert. You're very awake. For better or for worse, you're awake.
Right.
You're finding ways to get that body moving without them. And then you can get them engaged.
It's
kind of like bringing that alert level up.
That's a good point. And so it is possible. I think that's what's most important for parents to know is, we've got these kids that are either, gonna drive us completely crazy because they're running around the house and doing all these things, or those that are just completely sitting still and we can't get them moving, but there's hope for both ends.
Yes.
So, well, thank you, Matt, for sharing all of those strategies. The title of our broadcast tonight was Understanding Behavior and Your Child's Sensory Needs. And so I hope as our parents have been listening, you understand how behavior is so related to the sensory needs of your child. Like we talked about earlier, I love how you pointed out, Matt, that it doesn't have to be a diagnosis. It can just be a difficulty. And that's something that anybody, any child, any adult can deal with. So I do want to give you time to talk a little bit about your website, sensoryfitness.org. I had said to Matt, I said, he has a masterclass and he has a 5-day challenge that I wanted him to talk about for sure.
Yeah. The masterclass, I think it's on my website. If not, it's on
it
my
is.
Yep. Okay, great. Thanks.
I was on it today.
It's not my thing. So yeah, masterclass is, it's access to my video series, which I add to once a month. And there's like 45 videos on there.
That's awesome.
And you also get access to a bunch of Latch Kid stuff. They have sensory equipment. And then also once a week we do this fitness class. It's half an hour. It's on Tuesdays at 4 Pacific time. It's a lot of fun. So, and we have a couple other time slots as well. There's that. Then there's the 5-day challenge, which is, I'm not sure what that is anymore. Oh my goodness.
It was something about parents and kids to get them active.
Yeah, sorry. It's five challenges that with video examples that you do. And then
pick
videos and submit them and post them, and you get discounts to your Lackey Kids. So that
Lackey Kids is one of our partner organizations. So they've got some great stuff. And I know they're partnered with you too. So that's.
And then I'm putting together, if anyone's a fitness professional, I'm putting together a fitness for autism certification work. So anybody that works with kids on the spectrum, doing fitness with them, it's kind of a different approach than other programs because I kind of take it a sensory approach, more of a bottom-up approach, more of a cognitive kind of approach.
That's great. Yeah. So definitely check out sensoryfitness.org for all of those resources that Matt has. And this has been just a great hour of information. And I hope it's been encouragement for a lot of families too. You just have so much to share, Matt. I appreciate you coming back on our show again.
Thank you very much, Peggy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I also want to thank Knotgrass History for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. So next week, we are going to continue Autism Awareness Month and be talking about autism homeschooling with an autism homeschooling pro. You would actually call her the expert, Cheryl Swoop, who is the author of Simply Classical, and she's written a book on that. She has a curriculum related to that, and she used to be on our board of directors here at Sped Homeschool. But a lot of people just love what Cheryl has to say. She has a very gentle approach to homeschooling and has two adult children now on the spectrum. And she's homeschooled them all the way through and continues to teach them now into their adult years. So Cheryl will be on with us next week. So you'll definitely want to join us for that broadcast. And other things we have going on at Sped Homeschool, we'd definitely like you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We also have a newsletter that comes out twice a week. If you don't know that, you can go to our website and subscribe to that. All our blogs this month are also related to autism. So if you're homeschooling a child on the spectrum and want some tips, tricks, just some general information, all of our new blogs, as well as we'll be highlighting some of the older content on our website as well. And then we have webinars that we just started. And so those are once a month, how to homeschool. And if you're new to homeschool, homeschooling your high schooler that's a struggling learner, and also getting creative with your curriculum. And those are put on by some of our team members who are amazing. They are better teachers than I am. So you'll definitely want to check those out. But thank you again, Matt. Thank you for plowing through this, even though you had your second COVID shot. Yes, I think you need a rest after this. So, and thank you again, Knotgrass History, for sponsoring this episode, and all of you for joining us. We appreciate our viewers and look forward to seeing you again right here next week, same time, same place. So have a great night, everybody, and we'll see you next time.